Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Eye on the Ball here on KVOI 1030 AM. I'm on the phone with Doug Haller. Is he there from The Athletic? How are you, Doug?
I'm great, Steve. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. I just spoke to Michael Lev for a while on the other side. I wanted to talk to what it was like in that locker room for the ASU Sun Devils on that huge comeback. How was it?
Well, it was stunning, obviously. just based on what, they just kind of played it as, this is what this team has done all year, is keep fighting, and there is some truth to that. I mean, they played in close games, so they said that kind of helped them not to panic when they were down.
Yeah.
So I think that did help them because, I was down there, with, 5 minutes to go in the game, and, I didn't see any panic. They weren't panicking. But at one point, I just didn't see how they were going to pull
right.
this off because
–
Steve, Arizona had scored on 8 of 10 possessions. I just didn't think Arizona State was going to be able to stop them. And then, with Arizona trying to slow the game down and, that helped obviously. The turnovers obviously were huge, but, they still had to find a way to score, which they hadn't done that great all game. So, I don't want to say that they were stunned, but, just the way it all came out, I think they felt like they, or at least they knew that they had to have that game to kind of make this kind of a successful season because they had been in so many close games, and lost. They needed that one to kind of put them over the top.
No question. I along with many of you, in the press box, figured there was just no way. Arizona had kind of slowed down like you talked about, and there was 2 scores that they needed to get. In fact, they got 3. Those turnovers were part of the problem for Arizona. And then you think to yourself, wow, here's another one of those bizarre games. And you've seen many of them, haven't you, where these guys just kind of go to the wire and something crazy happens.
Yeah, it's kind of become like the one thing that you can expect in the Territorial Cup, and that is that, something unexpected will happen. I hate it. It's so easy to say, like, well, that was the craziest game or that was
sure.
The biggest comeback. But, I've covered, probably 11 Territorial Cups. I can't think of – and there's been some wild moments, as you know. I can't think of anything quite like that where a team scores 20 unanswered in the final 13 minutes to win. Especially the way they did it.
Yeah, right.
I just didn't think Arizona State had a comeback like that in them.
Right. No, and Arizona gave it to them. I do remember the 2010 year, I think, when Zendejas had like two block kicks, extra points. They went into overtime, and we were thinking, there's just how much more crazy could this get? Well, 8 years later, it got crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, even today when N'Keal Harry –
yeah.
Had his press conference to announce that he was foregoing his senior season. I mean, just the chatter before that was like, wow, I still can't believe they pulled that off. And then, but every coach says it. Like, these guys continue to fight. There is some truth to that. But, Arizona did play into their hands a little bit.
Yeah.
And it was stunning because when you walk down, when we leave the press box, when you walk down, you're kind of going through the crowd. The celebration was kind of on at Arizona Stadium, you could sense that the crowd had like was sensing this win, was sensing bowl eligibility.
Yeah.
You could just feel it. There was a lot of high fiving going around. There was a lot of, it was a celebration and then just how quickly, everything turned, the interception. Okay. But the fumble, I mean, that was the one that was just like, oh my goodness, what is going on here?
Sure.
That was crazy. And then, even then, I mean, U of A had a chance to go down there and kick the field goal. The play I think I wrote about, I don't know if it overshadowed so much, but it was the one where Barry Hill got behind ASU
yeah.
secondary.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, man, he had that ball. And it looked like the corner kind of got his hand in there. Kobe Williams got his hand in there to knock that out. But I was right there on the sideline for that. I thought, wow, that's it. That's 6 points. That's the game.
Sure.
But that was an incomplete pass. And field goal. It just everything kind of lined up for ASU.
Football gods came and took it away as they usually do. Hey, how was covering ASU this year with Herm? It had to be at least in my mind very fulfilling or very fun, whatever word you want to use.
Steve, to start it off, I didn't know what to expect because, you know, I had never been around Herm Edwards, and I kind of expected, I knew what I saw from him on TV, so I expected kind of a, you know, soundbite Herm. And I, my big question was like, man, is he going to be like that after every practice? Because I could see that, you know, and if you see it on a daily basis, then it looks fake. Like, okay, he's just putting on a show for the cameras. Not like that at all. He is about as even keel of a coach that I've ever been around. Win or lose, he's the same way. And that's probably the experience. I mean, he's probably seen and witnessed everything that football has to offer. I don't know if he's ever witnessed an ending like the one on Saturday, but he's just even keel. He doesn't get, you know, I've never seen him kind of lose his temper. I've never seen him get a little too high after a win. He's just the same guy every day. From a media standpoint, he's tremendous to work with because, you know, he's not, he enjoys that part of his job, I think.
Yeah.
He's always patient. He's willing to take every question. But I think, you know, Todd Graham was a disciplinarian, you know, lots of rules. Herm, not a lot of rules. You know, if guys messed up and as, you know, that always is going to happen, then, you know, they were suspended. But, you know, he kind of said, like, look, I'm going to expect you to be a man, go about your business. And I think just coming off the Todd Graham years where there was a totally different atmosphere, I think that kind of helped ASU at times.
Right, right. No, from your end of the business, that must be really refreshing, easy to deal with, and going to work is a lot more fun than the alternative.
Without question, yeah. And, you know, just the history that he has, it's almost like, you know, I do the same in basketball. When you're lacking storylines for a certain game, you can always go back in their histories and kind of resurrect something that, you know, they accomplished in their careers that might be relevant today.
Sure, sure, sure. We have a call. I'm not sure if it's a question to you or to me, but let's take it. Richard, you're on the line.
It's for both of you guys. There seemed to be an emotional dip there when about the time that Khalil threw the interception and the weak handoff. I'm wondering if there might have been an interaction between Khalil and the coach on the sideline that took the wind out of Khalil's sails for a little bit of time there. Am I just reading something that's not there?
My guess is there's probably nothing there. I did not see that. Did you see anything, Doug? Were you down on the field already?
I was. I didn't see anything like that, no.
Yeah, but, you know, kind of knowing Khalil, kind of being temperamental, maybe, but I didn't see anything like that. It was just one of those perfect situations where you had to have two things happen or three things happen, and they all happened. You know, the interception, the fumble, the missed kick, the you know, you can probably maybe find two or three other things in there, but everything that happened did go wrong. Richard, did you have another question? No, he's gone. Okay. Yeah, thanks for the call, Richard.
No, I was just going to say, you're right. There were three things, and after every one, I thought, okay, all right, they got the ball back. They still have to score. Okay, they scored. They still need the ball back. It's just like after every one, there was still that doubt in your mind that,
sure,
okay, so they got that break, but there's still so many other things that have to fall into place.
Sure, sure. I asked Michael this earlier. Because of your situation, obviously you write for the Athletic right now, which is a great gig.
Yep.
Congratulations on it. Had you already started your story, or did you kind of have to kind of, you started it afterward?
No, the best thing about the Athletic, Steve, is that you don't have to file a story right at the end of the game.
Yes.
I used to work for the Arizona Republic, so, you know, yes, everyone wants the story up on their website as soon as the game ended. So, no, I had written down thoughts. I think the first one I wrote down is, you know, ASU's in a shootout, or ASU doesn't do shootouts well. You know, just everything that, you know, I wrote down that I felt like that ASU may have lost this game last week in Eugene, when they lost to Oregon and lost out on,
sure,
a chance to win the South, you know, that hangover effect. So I was just writing down thoughts, all of it would have, you know, structured a story about them losing, but I didn't actually have a story in place.
So you probably didn't use any of those thoughts at the end
no,
of the day.
Not one. not one. I know, just being down on the sideline, that a lot of people had already written stories that they were going to have to go up there and hit the delete button on. But, yeah, I was one of the fortunate few who did not have to do that.
Right, right. Hey, we're going to go to break. Can you stick around for the maybe 12 minutes after the break?
Sure.
Great, great. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. We're going to go to break here on KVOI, Trusted Local News and Talk.
Hughes Federal Credit Union is proud to be recognized as the number one credit union across all of Arizona by Forbes. This national recognition highlights our commitment to high-quality products and services, our customer service, digital services, and financial advice. At Hughes Federal Credit Union, we offer higher savings rates, lower fees, and many free services. Make the switch. Join Hughes today. Visit HughesFCU.org/bestcreditunion. Certain restrictions apply. Insured by NCUA.
Dr. Bedoya, thanks for all that you do. How do we go about making your dental health better?
Patients have a totally different perspective of dentistry as and what they want done. Dentists, on the other hand, live in an ideal environment where we want to fix everything. A patient comes in with a lot of dental problems and they chip their front tooth. The dentist, you go in there and you see these broken down molars and these gaps and this gum disease, you know, where tartar has been there for 10, 15 years. And you're focused on those things, and the patient's like, yeah, doc, but I just want this chip on my front tooth fixed. My focus has been, in 41 years of practice, what does a patient want? What is their chief complaint? We're there to take care of whatever need they want.
Well, if you want to set up an appointment with Dr. Bedoya, you want to go to dedicateddental.net, or you want to call 750-1500. They have two locations, 5th and Wilmont, and then over on Mission on the southwest side of town.
Ah, the sounds of autumn. A babbling brook. Birds chirping. A cool fall wind. A gentle rain.
What? I can't stand this. I hate that sound. I hate when my car won't start. I don't want to live.
Don't let that sound ruin your fall season. Take your car to Ramsauer's Automotive on the corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge or at ramsauersauto.com.
These days, most families are concerned with having the right insurance coverage. Protecting your family, home, auto, and other valuable possessions can be challenging and sometimes expensive. Crest Insurance gives you flexible options and solutions while saving you money. Insurance is not one size fits all, and at Crest, we find the coverage that's best for you and your family. Visit us online at www.crestins.com or call us toll-free at 888-881-5765.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Trusted local news and talk. AM 1030 KBOI. We have our eye on business.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on KBOI 1030 AM. I'm on the phone with Doug Huller from The Athletic. I want to say now your season continues. Another month of football. Aren't you excited about that? I say that kind
well,
of
normally at this time of year. Football, as you know, is a daily sport. So normally about this time of year, I'm starting to OD on football.
Yes.
Especially with basketball starting up and, you know, the workload increases. But Arizona State has a chance to play in the Vegas Bowl, which is probably, December, a couple weeks away. So just a few more weeks, and then, of course, recruiting will start. So it really never ends.
Sure. No. I say, as you know, I say that sarcastically because, right, you get to go to Vegas and blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, it's what it does is it extends the season, and you have two sports to cover all the time. Speaking of the other sport, let's go to talk a little bit about basketball, get away from football a little. What's up with this ASU basketball team? What a fantastic start.
Yeah, they're off to a 5-0 start, the last unbeaten Pac-12 team, which, you know, people around here are already drawing parallels to last season when they went undefeated in the non-conference season. Went to Vegas, knocked off the number 15th team in the country, just like last year. Xavier mm-hmm. was 15th at the time when ASU beat her in Vegas. Mississippi State was 15th when ASU beat them last week in Vegas. So a lot of similarities. Now the schedule is really going to kick in with Nevada coming up in a couple weeks and then, you know, Kansas and road trips to Georgia and Vanderbilt. But, you know, it's a different team than Bobby Hurley has had. I mean, it's not, they don't chuck it from three and live by the three-point arc. They attack the basket. So, you know, they're better defensively, Steve. That's the biggest thing, is that there's actually some guys out there who really get after it on the defensive end. Of course, you know, their freshman, Legence Dort, is, you know, better than I think than everyone thought he would be coming in.
Yeah, no question. I was going to ask you about him. He's a combination of who and who, because I've heard some names.
Well, he's built like Marcus Smart. You know, he's 6'4", 217, I think he's what he said most recently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a few pounds down from where he started the season. So he's thick. There's no doubt about that. And the big thing is he has a motor. And the motor just doesn't apply on offense, which is usually the case with freshmen. When they come in, he gets after it on defense as well. So physically, he kind of reminds me of Marcus Smart. But after the Utah State game in Las Vegas, the championship game there, their coach, Craig Smith, said that, you know, the way he comes off ball screens and goes downhill and attacks the basket is kind of reminded him of Victor Oladipo, which I thought was a pretty good a comparison. Not to say that he's going to turn into those players, but just taking those parts of the game, I think that's probably the best comparison I could come up with.
Right. You saw Raleigh Alkins a time or two, if not more. What were your comparisons with him? Anything?
Similar. It's similar as far as build goes.
Body, yeah.
Body. I don't know if their games are quite the same. Lou is not. He's shooting 43% from three, but I still wouldn't say he's. You know, that kind of makes him look like a better shooter than what he is. I think that's probably where he needs the most work. A great rebounder. I see the similarities there. I don't know who might be more athletic. That would be a good question. I mean, you're not the first person to bring up his name, that's for sure. It applies. I'm not sure who's more athletic, but I can see the similarities in those two.
Well, when you bring athletic, because, you know, I saw Raleigh a few times, obviously covering him down here, and that's what he definitely had, was this athleticism. Mm-hmm. His ability to play and maybe do things, he just did it naturally. So this kid must be, the Dort kid must be very, very good.
Yeah, he's a load going to the basket. And, you know, what he does really well is when he comes off the ball screen, he goes down the lane. He kind of does the Euro step where he can go either way with either hand. And that really helps him out. He's been getting a lot of calls. It'll be interesting to see if he gets those calls in Pac-12 play. Cause last year, ASU got a lot of calls in non-conference play. And then once they got into conference, didn't work out. So it'll be interesting to see. But he draws a lot of contact.
Well, you know how it is. You come to the Pac-12, and who knows what's going to happen in the officiating realm. They kind of dampen everything when it comes to playing time. Should be fun, though.
Right.
I mean, honestly, the rivalry, again, in basketball should be heated if ASU is legit and if Arizona can play any better than it did, because, and truthfully, they're not that good compared to the teams I've seen in the last 25 years.
Well, in the conference,
very bad, very bad.
Not off to a great start, and I feel like they really needed, coming off last year's performance in the postseason, they needed a strong opening month or two, and they just haven't gotten it. It'll be interesting to see between these two teams. I think Arizona State has maybe a higher ceiling, but you know, Arizona, if they defend, play hard, I think those two things they've already gotten established. It'll be interesting to see how far they can kind of max out. But, you know, the difference between 1-5 in the Pac-12 this year isn't going to be very great. So, who knows? Maybe the schedule plays into it. It'll be interesting to see.
No, I totally agree with you. 1-5 could be anybody. Who are the top two teams in your estimation?
Well, I think once Oregon gets all their other freshmen back, who's been hurt, I can't think of his name off the top of my head. I think probably I would still go with them, and then probably I would go Arizona State, Arizona in that order.
Wow.
UCLA, I just don't.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them. And Utah's already losing games they shouldn't be losing.
What, Washington? Where's Washington fallen in this mess?
You know, I wasn't as high on Washington as a lot of people going into the season. I think I had them fifth in the preseason.
Wow.
Media poll. I just felt like that last year a lot of their success was stemmed from the zone, that, you know, they played well, and maybe once people got a chance to see that, that they would be better against it this year. I'm not a big David Crist fan as a point guard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no doubt, Matisse Thybulle and Noah Dickerson, they have some players, but, you know, I was just not as high on them as a lot of people are. I know they were in the top 25 to start the season. I just didn't think they were going to be quite that good. And, of course, they've struggled a little bit coming out of the blocks, too.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
It's really, like I said, I mean, you go with Oregon, that's kind of the default pick. But after that, it's really, you would think Colorado, they have a lot back, even though they lost their big kid to a knee injury.
Yeah.
I love McKinley Wright, but, from what I've seen so far, USC's also, banged up and have a lot of guys out, and they just barely beat UC Bakersfield last night. It's too early to say. Once everybody gets all their pieces in place, maybe we'll have a better picture of what's going to happen.
Yeah, even then, like you said, I think the league is very down. It's watered down for sure. With you picking ASU 2 and Arizona 3, wow, very optimistic, which may or may not happen. I mean, there's still a lot of basketball to play, but that just means that, the league is down. And you're probably right. ASU is probably better than what we think, given the Dort kid and how Bobby coaches. So we'll soon see.
Yeah, and another thing, Arizona State has brought in a transfer, Zylan Cheatham, who's a Phoenix kid who played at San Diego State. He's given them a lot, Steve. He's, he kind of gives them that defensive mindset, a guy who can guard multiple positions.
Oh, yeah.
A better playmaker than I think a lot of people thought. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm not quite as down as, I know a lot of people are down on Arizona, but, I think the games in Maui, obviously, they weren't, that's going to Auburn and Gonzaga,
sure.
Those are two quality opponents. Maybe they're not ready for that yet. Obviously not as talented as some of the teams that you've seen down there in the past, but maybe they could get it done with just defense and togetherness.
Right, right. Now, that's a very good possibility. We'll see how they mesh the rest of the way. But, hey, Doug, thanks for joining me. Great to reminisce about a bad weekend for Arizona, a good weekend for ASU, and we'll talk some more later on the hoop season.
All right, Steve, thanks for having me.
All right, Doug, thanks. I appreciate it very much. We're going to go to break and come back with David Kelly from KOLD-TV.
Hey, this is Ken Flower of Arizona Party Rental. It's that time. U of A tailgating. I gotta have one of those burgers and one of those dogs. And who's under this Arizona Party Rental tent? You look familiar.
That's right. I'm Sheriff Napier.
Gosh, it's great to see you.
Hey, you're Ken Flower. Aren't you wanted?
I'm speechless.
That's right. Everybody wants Arizona Party Rental.
Hey, you can join the party, too. Arizona Party Rental just west of Alvernon on Speedway or online at arizonapartyrental.net.
Next year's fondest memories begin with this year's Lexus December to Remember sales event. Right now, get Lexus cash and dealer discounts on all models with up to $11,000 off the new 2018 LS500. Get incredibly low interest rate financing and exceptional lease offers on your favorite models. Hurry in. All offers on approved credit and expire 12/3/18. See dealer for details at Lexus of Tucson on Speedway at Columbus, at the Auto Mall, or lexusoftucson.com.
As a mother, you don't want to have to worry about this bill is coming, but then she needs this chemo. That's a decision you shouldn't have to make.
It's a huge burden lifted financially, and so it allows you to give singular focus to your child. I've never known a hospital that takes care of their patients so thoroughly.
That was the first thing I was like, how are we going to do this? When they told us that we didn't have to pay a single bill, I was like, wow. They pretty much have saved us.
It's like the world has been lifted off of your shoulders, and now your focus is supporting this child.
There is not another hospital like St. Jude. The patient care is unmatchable. It saved my life. It saved my daughter's life. It saved our family.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
John C. Scott is hosting one of the longest-running political talk shows in Arizona.
John C. Scott features interviews with elected officials, candidates, reporters, consultants, and voters in what shapes up to be one of the most critical election years in our history.
The John C. Scott Show, weekday afternoons 3 to 5 on AM 1030 KBOI. Trusted local news and talk.
Trusted local news and talk. AM 1030 KBOI. We have our eye on entertainment.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Eye on the Ball here on KVOI 1030 AM. I'm lucky to have David Kelly on the line. Are you there, Dave?
Yes. Can you hear me,
Steve? I can hear you now.
All right.
I know you like my music. You like my music, Dave?
I am a yacht rock type of guy, so yeah, you keep playing that music. I like Very Superstitious. Yeah, that's not really yacht rock. That's a little bit more maybe old soul, but I like it.
Sure,
yeah,
sure. Let's talk about Saturday. Are you superstitious in all these games that you watch and weird endings? Because you've seen a few.
Yeah, you know, I've covered the NFL. I've covered college football now. I've seen some strange things. I always harken back to a Browns game in like maybe about 2001 where they were up 14 points with about maybe 45 seconds to go in Chicago, and the Bears scored two touchdowns to send the game into overtime, and then the Browns won the toss, got the ball to start the overtime, and they threw a pick six to lose the game on the first play. So it was literally like 21 points in about a minute span to turn a football game. So I've seen stranger things.
Right.
Than what I saw Saturday in Arizona.
So what did you think on Saturday? Because it was kooky.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was unfortunate. I think it was an unfortunate set of circumstances that kind of set into motion. But I always go back to the play on the field. I know there's been a lot of talk over the last 48 hours on the play calling and that type of thing. And, I mean, I went back and looked at the play calling over some of the games in which the Wildcats had the lead in the fourth quarter, and it wasn't different than what they had done in some of the games that they had won. I mean, you go back to the Oregon State game. They ran 13 plays in the fourth quarter. 12 of them were run plays, and they did that, and they iced that game away. They got a couple of big runs from J.J. Taylor in the fourth quarter to ice that game away. It was the same thing at Oregon. They ran 13 out of 14 plays on the ground. So the mindset and the concept was really not that much different than what they had done in games where they had sizable leads going into the fourth quarter. Now, there were some games, you know, Colorado was one in California where the leads were slightly less, single-digit leads, where they maybe threw the ball a little bit more, but not sizably more. It was always their MO to run the ball to win when they had the game, when they had leads in the fourth quarter. So I just don't buy into that they got conservative, because it was what they did all year. If you want to say they're conservative all year, that's great, but nobody says a word in those other games that, oh, they got conservative because they won. You only say that, and you think back to your life watching football. When have people ever talked about a team getting conservative? It's when they lose the game. It's
right.
Not when they win the game.
Yeah, I know you're right.
You can go back 40 years. I'm 51 years old. I've been watching football for almost 45 years. You know, and that's the only time people talk about an offense getting conservative is when they lose at the end.
Right, no question. That's why I have you, Dave. You always break down that tape for us and give us that quirky play. So in Saturday's game, what was the play or two that created this whole mess?
Well, it was the turnovers. I mean, that you cannot – turn the ball. First of all, I mean, you know football, Steve. You can't if you lose the turnover battle overall. Most often, you're going to lose the game. And if you turn the ball over in the fourth quarter, you're most likely going to lose the ball game. I mean, that was the big killer in this whole thing. I mean, you look at the first drive. I think they ran six straight times on that first drive. They took 4 minutes off the clock with six plays. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
When you're talking about now they had to punt. Ideally, maybe if you get a punt that pins them inside the 20 or maybe inside the 10. I mean, Klumpf had a couple of good punts in that game that where you stuck them inside the 10-yard line. That one goes into the end zone, so you bring them out to the 20. So now they still have to go 80 yards, and they were able to do that. I mean, I think the last four plays that ASU had on that first touchdown drive, I think they went 50-something yards over the last four plays. So they had some big chunk plays. But when I looked at those four chunk plays, the only one where I graded Arizona down was the screen pass to Eno Benjamin, where, you know, Colin Schooler was a step slow getting there. They had him for a 3-yard loss, and Colin just couldn't get there. And that was a theme that I saw a lot at the end of the season. As great a player as Colin Schooler was, at the end of the season, he just seemed like he was a step slow getting there on a chance to make a lot of plays. And you look back to big games of the past, man, that's a play Scooby Wright makes in 2014 in a close game when you win. You know, just getting there and making a big play like that. Scotty Young made an incredible play on the next drive after the interception that killed that opportunity for Arizona, and they had to take a field goal. And P.J. Johnson also on that screen pass, you know, had a chance to get him in the backfield, and they just couldn't get there. And that led to him getting close. I think he ran it inside the 10, and they scored on the next play. So just I look at little plays like that where you just couldn't make that play to get off the field defensively on that particular drive. And then the two turnovers obviously put your defense in a short field situation. And Arizona State made plays to get, you know, get those points that they needed to make there. I mean, that's to me, the turnovers was the killer
in
that fourth quarter.
So when Pollock lined the ball up and they were on the 35, what was the percentage you thought that he'd make it?
Well, I'll go back to a tweet I sent out as Arizona State was on that drive. And the tweet that I sent out was, you know what's going to happen here, right? And I kind of vaguely veiled that because my thinking was, you know what's going to happen. And what's going to happen is this kid, they're going to go down. This kid has made 12 in a row, and he's not going to make that one. And I had just had that feeling. I was like, if it comes down to a field goal, I just had a feeling he wasn't going to make it.
Right.
He lined up, and he had made 12 in a row. He was such a large reason that they were even in that position over the last four or five games because they had finally solidified that piece that was so inconsistent early in the season. And he makes four kicks in that game, and I just did not have a good feeling about it. 3 minutes to 4 minutes before he even lined up to kick it.
Yeah, I felt the same way. Javier Morales was sitting to my left, and Anthony was already on the floor on the field, and I'm thinking, oh, he'll make it. And then I said to myself, where am I at? I'm in Arizona press box. And I sort of turned to Javier and says, never mind, he's going to miss this. He's going to miss this. And I couldn't tell you why he was going to miss this, but he missed it. And it was just, you know, one of those games that you go to the city and always something happens. There's always something.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I said, give Arizona State credit. You know, they made plays in the end that they had to make offensively. They hit on a big 2-point conversion that they had. You know, I thought that Kerm made a great decision to kick the field goal and take the points there on that one drive.
Right.
To just continue to cut in the lead and give his defense a chance. And then, and like what I heard Michael's interview, what Michael said, I mean, how many times have Khalil Tate and J.J. Taylor made that handoff so easily, and then it just comes apart in that moment? There were just not enough playmakers on the field for Arizona. And you can go to the last drive. Khalil Tate had two open receivers downfield that he missed. He missed Sean Brown, who was open. He missed Tony Ellison, who was open. He made a great throw and a great catch by Stanley Berryhill on a third down play to continue the drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then Stanley Berryhill drops the touchdown pass in the end zone. There were three. And I know a lot of people have said if you take the extra points, you win that game by one. But I look at the fact that they dropped three touchdown passes in that game. I value that 15 points because those three dropped touchdown passes came on three drives. Two of which they got field goals, the last one which they didn't get the field goal. So that's 21 points. You got 6 points on drives. You could have gotten 21 if you don't drop touchdown pass. One by Cedric Peterson, one by Sean Brown,
the last one by Stanley Berryhill, I value that 15 points more than I value kicking PATs and the 2 points that everybody else is talking about.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. And it all adds up to a defeat that should have never happened. What was your take on the post-game interviews?
Well, in terms of Khalil Tate, I mean, his act is tired.
Totally agree with you.
He's not a leader. That's not what a leader gets up there and does. And I said in Wildcat Breakdown this morning, you know, I would have more respect for him if he got up there and cried, because at least I would feel like he cared.
Yeah.
He's not my staff quarterback, and I've said that before. I'm not a running quarterback guy. I like guys that can stand back there and throw the football. If he graduates and wants to leave, I wouldn't be disappointed.
Yeah, I don't think you're alone in that feeling. I wouldn't even know where he would go, to tell you the truth. I'm not being mean. Being honest.
Rod Smith might take it at Illinois. If those folks keep their jobs there, I don't know if Lovie Smith is going to get another year there.
He got an extension. He got an extension.
Did he get an extension?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a possibility.
Well, that's certainly a possibility. I mean, there's somebody that will take him. I mean, I did see some growth. There was growth from Khalil Tate. I thought there were some areas where I did think he got a little bit better at reading the defense, but there's still too many inconsistencies in his passing game. And like I said, I'm not a running quarterback kind of guy, but that's what he does.
Right.
It's what he does. And you have to do what you do best to be successful. And I thought the fact that obviously he was hurt, and one of the things I thought kind of towards the end of the season, that the fact that he was hurt early in the season, Khalil to me seems like that kind of kid that he has to be. The fact that he couldn't run also affected his mindset and his ability to be able to throw the ball. I think he has to have that total comfortability with his body to even be successful throwing the ball. There's a lot of guys, a lot of quarterbacks who, if I can't run, okay, I'm going to sit back here and I'm going to make throws. I'm going to pick defenses. Okay, I understand I can't move and I can't run. But for Khalil, the fact that he couldn't move the way that he wanted to, I think affected his ability to throw the football as well. And that's why he has to be completely healthy, I think, to be the full quarterback that you want to see him be. Could he get better with another offseason? That's possible, but I make it a competition. If I'm Kevin Sumlin, I make it a competition. It, you know, I bring these other guys in, Grant Cano, and if they can beat him out, they beat him out. If he can win the job again, he wins the job, and you go forward with him next season if he wants to be here. But if he wants to be here, he needs a little bit of an attitude adjustment.
No, I don't disagree with you at all. He lost me two games in when, you know, he with those questions and answers, it was just okay, if you're going to be this way, I get it. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Hey, can you stay for another 12, 13 minutes on the break, after the break?
Absolutely.
Okay, we're going to take a break here and come back and talk to David on the other side.
Offense comes to the line. The ball is snapped. Sweep toss to the halfback. Trick play. He's going to throw it. Taking a shot deep. It's tipped and intercepted by Crest Insurance.
Wow, what a play by Crest Insurance. Nobody saw that coming, but Crest had the coverage in place that avoided a disaster. That's the benefit of an experienced team. Great coverage when it matters most.
Whether it's home, auto, or your business, the team at Crest Insurance makes all the difference. For outstanding coverage when you need it most, go with Crest Insurance.
Hey, this is Ken Flower of Arizona Party Rental. It's that time. U of A tailgating. I gotta have one of those burgers and one of those dogs, and who's under this Arizona Party Rental tent? You look familiar.
That's right, I'm Sheriff Napier.
Gosh, it's great to see you.
Hey, you're Ken Flower. Aren't you wanted?
I'm speechless.
That's right, everybody wants Arizona Party Rental.
Hey, you can join the party too. Arizona Party Rental just west of Alvernon on Speedway or online at arizonapartyrental.net.
Kaya weighed just 1 pound, 1 ounce at birth and endured a grueling 163 days in the hospital.
Thanks to research funded by the March of Dimes, Kaya survived premature birth, the number one killer of babies in the United States. The birth of a child is supposed to be a joyful event, yet each year about 380,000 babies like Kaya are born too soon, and many have serious health problems that can last a lifetime. But you can change that. Join 3 million friends, families, and colleagues in more than 500 communities across the nation in March for Babies. The money we raise is so important in fighting premature birth and other life-threatening challenges that newborns face. We're supporting research and programs that help more moms have full-term pregnancies and healthier babies. Sign up, join a team, and start fundraising today at marchforbabies.org. Together, we can fight premature birth and help more babies be born healthy.
No more knowledgeable woman than Dawn English and her irresistible Tucson, food and culture in the Old Pueblo. From 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on KVOI AM 1030, trusted local news and talk. Reliable and timely financial information from Bloomberg Radio Network. 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. on KVOI AM 1030, trusted local news and talk.
Trusted local news and talk, AM 1030 KVOI. We have our eye on news.
Hey, welcome back to Eye of the Ball. It's funny, you have hollow notes. Sometimes your face still curves at me.
Well, it's, you know, say it isn't so. So you guys could chuckle over
yes,
that.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So say it isn't so. That's a good. Let me transition to there to with David Kelly. I'm on the phone with KOLD's David Kelly, who knows football very, very well. I wanted to get your impression. What do you think of the job Sumlin did this year?
Well, I think you have to say it was a disappointing year from the standpoint that I expected more. I didn't expect a lot more. I think I had them penned in at 7 wins to begin the season. I thought this team would be better than it turned out to be. I thought there were players there. I thought that he had talent on both sides of the ball to work with. I think we had some concerns about the receiving game going in to the season and what that was going to entail, and we saw the great breakout that Sean Poindexter had, and Tony Ellison was very solid. I thought they would maybe use the tight ends a little bit more. I thought, you know, every year we go into a season thinking that they're going to use the tight ends more. It boggles my mind how the tight end is such a big part of the National Football League, and in a lot of schools they don't. It's such a forgotten position. I just don't get it. On the college level, why tight ends are not used more. But again, it didn't happen this year when Bryce Wamba had 5 catches and I think Jamie Nunley got hurt at one point and they probably didn't want to play the freshman kid this year. They wanted to kind of hold him out and give him a year to get ready. I think potentially the Williams kid could be a kid you look at going down the stretch. But yeah, I thought it would be a better year than it was. I certainly expected them to be a bowl team. So yeah, from that standpoint, it's just, they're not going to a bowl game. So it was a disappointing first season for Kevin Sumlin. And the thing that concerns me about Kevin Sumlin is he has not had a great history with quarterbacks and keeping quarterbacks around. And I'm not sure, I haven't looked deep enough into why that is and what the issues were at Texas A&M with guys transferring out after 1 or 2 years. But I hope that's not obviously that there was some, you know, I don't know. I just the relationship with Khalil doesn't seem to be one that's great. And maybe he's not a fit for really what they want to do, and they've got to get the quarterback in here that fits what they want, how this offense really wants to work. If that's Grant Gunnell coming in, I mean, you never want to put everything in the hands of a true freshman to have to play right away, but I think they've got to be solidified at the quarterback position, and that never seemed to be the case at Texas A&M. And that's my big concern about Kevin.
Right. No, I don't disagree with you at all. So, did you enjoy going to Monday press conferences?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I thought they got better. I mean, it was funny. I heard you say that he says a lot, but he doesn't really say anything. And that's true. He does speak in very elongated kind of answers, and you kind of have to pick and choose what you want out of that, especially for television, where sometimes you only have like 15 seconds to get in a really good bite. He does not talk in sound bites, which
no.
is difficult for me.
But
I thought that as the year went on, he was pretty good with information, especially a lot of the questions that I asked. I only get to talk to him on Mondays because most of the games are in the evenings on Saturdays, and I'm on the desk those nights, so I went for the first half of the Arizona State game, and that was the only time I was actually at a game all season long because of the way that they're kind of situated with the time. So I don't really get a chance to talk to them in the post-game press environment. I listen to, obviously, the ones that I try to listen to them all just to kind of make sure I know what he's saying and all that. But you know, I thought he was good with information as the season went on. I thought he got better.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the media policy that we go through. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I've never liked it. For somebody that's covered like professional sports, where it's a lot more of an open environment, and I get it, they're trying to protect the players. I lived in Memphis for 3 years, and I did some. I worked primarily in baseball there, but I also had some time in the offseason where I covered the University of Memphis basketball program when John Calipari was the coach. One of the things I always loved about Cal was he treated his program like it was a professional program. It was an open environment. You know, practices weren't always open, but largely you could go. There were times when they were open, so you could go and watch part of practice, maybe not the whole thing, but you would be able to go in and see parts of practice. Locker rooms were open after the game, so you could go in and talk to whoever you wanted to for however you wanted to. I mean, it's like it used to be, but it has just become a very closed environment where, you know, even Sumlin, you know, he only really talked to us on Monday. At least Rich Rod would still talk to you on, I believe it was Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. You'd still get him other days. So if there was stuff that came up during the week, you would still be able to talk to him about that kind of thing. Whereas you really only get that Monday shot, maybe the Tuesday conference call, to ask someone any questions, and you really don't get that late in the week kind of opportunity, which I think we missed out on because there's so much that develops between Monday and Thursday. So that's a miss, I think, for them on allowing us to really get to know him a little bit more as a coach. But the thing with the players, I think I wasn't necessarily opposed to the way they did it this year. I thought it was maybe a little bit better situation, you know, doing it all on one day. I don't go for the players on Tuesday. And the only reason I don't go on Tuesday is because Monday and Tuesday is my day off. I go on Monday because I think it's a better environment for me to get the information I need from a head coach versus going for the players. And I just have to have one day off. I mean, Tuesday is just my day off. I don't do anything on Tuesday. I zone out. Damian usually covers the players on Tuesday, so it's not like we're missing that opportunity. And if there's anything I need, information I need, I'll tell Damian, and Damian will go and get that information for me in that setting. So, obviously, I think the way that it was done under the Rich Rod, where you could ask for players, I think that's better because sometimes you want to tell a story on your timeline versus theirs.
No question.
I would like, you know, maybe to get back to the situation where you could request guys. If they're going to bring them all in a group, well, at least let me request one or two guys that I want to talk to versus the four or five that you're going to bring me. And so there's that. And then, obviously, if you're doing it in a one-day setting, You may not get guys because they have a class. If I have a Tuesday class every week at 2:00, that guy's never going to be there.
Right.
And so you missed out, I think, on an opportunity to really get to know these kids a little bit more.
Do you find that there's a correlation between the attendance and all that, where the people who pay tickets or go to the games don't know the players, so there's really not much to cheer for, unless
I think that's part of it. I don't know if I would say that that's the entirety of it. If you look across the game, I mean, it's not just here. I mean, there were 60,000 people at the USC Notre Dame game on Saturday night. That's unheard of. I mean, that's a game that has routinely drawn 90 to 100,000 people when they play at the Coliseum. And yeah, it was a down year for USC, but it was still the Notre Dame game. And I think the attendance is down across the board in a lot of places, maybe not in some of the hotbeds like Michigan and Ohio State and some of the schools down in the SEC. I just think that there's a disconnect. I'm not sure where the disconnect is at this point. I think TV has a lot to do with it. I think You know, people just want to sit and be comfortable and watch games, you know, and not have to deal with crowds and that type of thing. I just think that there's a little bit more of a disconnect now with the amount of games that are on TV and the accessibility of that and multiple screens that people just don't go to games as much maybe as they used to.
Right, maybe money. There's a lot of different issues. I'd ask you, how would David the Czar try to fix it, but I won't go there. We'll do that later. I will ask David the Czar, what do you make of this basketball team that you're covering?
It's interesting so far. I think they've got some young kids that can score. They've obviously got some issues on the inside. They got to figure out how to use Ryan Luther. I was the most fascinating thing about Maui to me was the disappearance of the bench, because I thought that was one of the strengths going into Maui, was that, you know, you had guys like Dylan Smith who could come off the bench and score, but he just absolutely disappeared in Maui, and they've got to figure that out, because you've got to be able to go to those, whether it's going to be a rotation of two or three, and get some offense from those guys if you're going to win games in the Pac-12.
No question. I agree with you on Luther and Smith. I think Smith's so far had only one good game, one good shooting game. Other than his defense is needed, and he's doing that fairly well. But there's a lot to wonder about this basketball team. Of course, we know that they're not good enough to beat the Gonzagas and the Auburns. We know they're good enough to beat the Houston Baptists. So where do they fall in the middle?
Yeah, I think that's about where. I mean, I think, you know, what they're picked to finish fourth. I never believe that a U of A team is going to finish less than – I think it's hard for me to believe that they'll ever finish less than fourth in the Pac-12. I think they're good. I think they're that good. They're good enough to be one of the best four teams in the conference. Sean Miller's a good enough coach to make that happen. I see them maybe being in that 3-5, maybe as low as 5, and I wouldn't be surprised if they could finish maybe as high as 3.
Yep.
In Pac-12 play. I think they've got enough talent to do that.
Given the state of the Pac-12's competition, that's not saying a whole lot.
Everybody's in love with my alma mater, USC, and man, I haven't seen it yet in the games I've watched.
Right. Well,
the USC notoriously is a team that starts slow. I don't even get what Andy Enfield's teams never play well in the preseason, but they seem to figure it out come conference time.
Right. We'll see. Just on the phone with Doug Haller, and he was talking, well, he's got Oregon at the top. I think everybody has that. Then he went ASU and then U of A, and I'm thinking, if that happens, holy whatever word you want to use, this league must be horrible, and it is.
it's like football. It's either very bad or everybody's just kind of good, and they all just knock each other off. I mean, but I guess with football, we'll find out again when we get to the bowl season and see how the Pac-12 does, because was it a bad conference, or was everybody just really kind of good and there was no really elite team this year?
Right. I'm sure you would lean to that. There was not a good team in this league this year.
There was definitely no elite team, but I think there were a lot of solid good teams.
Yeah. Okay. I'll agree to disagree. But Dave, thanks for having me or having you on. Thank you. Appreciate it. We'll do this again down the road. We always enjoy talking to you and getting your thoughts on hoops and football.
Great show, Steve. Keep doing it. I love all the interviews.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it. Well, that'll conclude day, whatever day it is, 15-16 of the Rivera hostage situation. We'll be back tomorrow with some guests. A busy week this week. Thanks for listening, everybody.